Sometimes election results just feel right, like in 2016.
I've had successes and I've had setbacks, sometimes really painful ones. This loss hurts.
Hillary's concession tears really sweeten my morning coffee. But other times, election results can leave you a bit baffled. For me, that happened at the close of 2017.
Thank you! Oh my! Folks, I gotta tell you, I think that I have been waiting all my life and now I just don't know what the hell to say.
In an uglier than normal Senate race, Democrat Doug Jones upset the Republican candidate to become the first Democrat-elected senator of Alabama since 1990. The fact that Doug Jones won wasn't the part that was so surprising. His opponent had been accused of sexually assaulting multiple women, one allegedly being a minor. Several of the claims appeared to fall apart under scrutiny, but the allegations gave Doug Jones a clear edge heading into the home stretch. So it wasn't Doug Jones winning that shocked me. It was something else. As with every election, the Democrats were busy tarring the Republican candidate as a racist. But a surprising twist in the final days put the whole race in doubt. Doug Jones distributed a political mailer that disturbed many black voters.
The ad for Doug Jones appears to have been sent out primarily to African-American households. But many recipients say it's race baiting.
It's not gone over too well.
Those flyers showed an image of an incredulous black man and asked, quote, "If a black man went after high school girls, anyone would try to make him a senator?"
As a black man, I thought it was an unnecessary apparatus to bring race into that. The image was so disturbing to me.
I was offended.
For his campaign to put this flyer out, it's a complete slap in the face.
I think it was the wrong way to go.
I did not like that flyer.
Doug Jones may just have thrown away the election with this racist flyer.
And it could cost him the election, frankly, on Tuesday.
It was one of those rare moments where everyone agreed, both left and right, that the Democrat candidate was clearly race baiting. So when the election results came in, you would have expected to see Doug Jones punished by black voters, even if just a little bit. But the exact opposite happened.
I wanted to put up on the screen how they broke for these candidates, just so we can see the raw numbers. As you see there, black men and black women, over 90%, well over breaking for Doug Jones.
The Democrat Doug Jones received 96% of the black vote, a whopping 98% from black women. The percentage was astonishing to me, but what made these results even more shocking? It was that Doug Jones ran an advertisement during the campaign praising the Confederate Army.
Doug Jones, I guess this week you dropped a new ad that caused a little bit of a stir.
He honored the guys fighting to keep the institution of slavery alive, yet still received 96% of the black vote. Which got me to thinking, how could this be? How does the Democrat Party continue to get over 90% of the black vote? I'm Patrick Carelci.
And I'm Adriana Cortez.
And this is Red Pilled America, a storytelling show.
This is not another talk show covering the day's news. We are all about telling stories.
Stories Hollywood doesn't want you to hear.
Stories the media mocks. Stories about everyday Americans that the globalists ignore.
You could think of Red Pilled America as audio documentaries, and we promise only one thing. The truth.
Welcome to Red Pilled America.
Have you ever asked yourself, how does the Democrat Party lock up 90% of the black vote? The same can't be said for whites, Hispanics, Asians, and any other American group. Every single election cycle, no matter how many race-baiting remarks the Democrats make, no matter how poor their results are with the black community, decade after decade, black Americans give Democrats their near-unanimous support. In my bachelor years, we called that a booty call, because every time the Democrats ring, the black community answers, no matter what. I grew up in an all-black neighborhood, so I had a hunch why this is happening, but wanted to test my theory out. So I spoke to a few black Americans to get their take, and they all landed on a version of the same answer. And one person in particular, Candace Owens, stumbled on the answer in an unexpected way, by launching an anti-harassment company. In the process, she would uncover the secret to how Democrats have been able to keep Black Americans near unanimously voting for Democrats. It was 2016, and Candace Owens, a sharp-as-a-tack young Black woman with confidence to spare, had just launched her passion project called Social Autopsy. The new entrepreneur from Stamford, Connecticut, had experienced a life-altering event 9 years earlier and was looking to create an online solution to help kids avoid the trauma that she had suffered.
My senior year of high school, I received some phone calls one night from some anonymous voices on the other line, and the phone calls were extremely violent. We're going to tar and feather that we're going to hang you from a tree, we're going to put a bullet in the back of your head like we did to Martin Luther King. Just really volatile, extremely racist voicemails, and it came from a blocked number. And the worst thing that can happen to you at that age, you know, you're not even a person yet, is to receive these phone calls threatening your life. There, it was my first sort of brush up with racism, if you will say, or racist terms.
She didn't do anything with the phone messages that night, but the following day, she brought them up to a teacher in the context of what they were being taught that day, and the instructor made her immediately report the calls to the school administration. After hearing the recordings, the principal called the authorities, and that's when all hell broke loose for Candace. The only person she knew on the phone call was a friend that recently felt jilted because Candace had a new boyfriend and wasn't hanging out with a friend as much. But in a turn of bad luck for all involved, one of the other kids present during the call was the son of the Democrat mayor of Stamford, Connecticut. This little nugget thrust her story into the news and turned her life upside down.
So I woke up the next day and my entire life had changed.
Welcome back to Red Pilled America. During her senior year in high school, Candace Owens received a hateful voicemail, and one of the kids involved was the son of the Democrat mayor of Stamford, Connecticut. This little nugget thrust her story into the news and turned her life upside down.
So I woke up the next day and my entire life had changed. I was on the front page of every newspaper throughout the state of Connecticut. News channels were coming to obviously politicize the moment because that's what politicians do. Nobody cared about the kids. Nobody cared about the kids involved. I would have been totally fine with the sorry.
The event had a deep impact on her. She ended up dropping out of school for 6 weeks. She found herself caught up in a political firestorm, a racial political firestorm, and of course, the predictable players got involved.
The NAACP would show up at my school every day because they wanted to like walk me in and be seen with me. It was a photo op for them. They never spoke to me on the phone. They never asked me how I was doing. So that forever destroyed my relationship and my ideas about what the NAACP was.
Although Candace was the victim, she doesn't give off a victim mentality. She actually felt empathy for the boys that left the nasty messages. In her mind, everyone was so busy leveraging the racial and political aspects of the story for their own personal gain that they were blind to the fact that everyone involved were just kids.
The idea that people got arrested, you know, for leaving voicemails to me, and these are children, didn't really sit right with me. Like, why don't?
Throughout the ordeal, she didn't think much about politics, but she thought she knew where she stood on the subject.
Things were happening, which would have helped me think about politics, but I never thought of it in terms of liberal or conservative. I assumed, obviously, that I was a Democrat and I was a liberal because I'm Black.
She went on to college and eventually entered the finance industry, but the incident stuck with her. So once she paid off her school loans, she started developing Social Autopsy, an anti-harassment website. The idea was that the site would capture the awful things that some kids say on social media in hopes to minimize the online vitriol. If a jock was to, say, sling racial slurs at a classmate on Facebook, his football coach could search and find it on the Social Autopsy database and suspend him for a few games to teach him a lesson. A minor punishment that, in Candace's view at the time, more fit the crime.
But it really was just about trying to create something that could be used effectively for children to understand that what you write can have consequences. Let's make you understand that before the consequences are so big that your lives are ruined.
Candace worked for months on the idea, talking to teachers and getting buy-in from anti-harassment organizations.
The human race has never been more connected.
She then put together a video to explain the idea and raise money on Kickstarter, a fundraising site, to develop the necessary technology.
There are literally thousands of instances of hate speech being circulated online.
She pulled an all-nighter that night before the launch of her fundraising campaign, and the launch started off pretty good, with $2,700 raised by Hour 13. If she kept up that pace, she'd easily reach her goal of $75,000 by the end of the campaign. That was about the time that she got an email from a woman named Zoe Quinn.
And she says, like, you know, I am ground zero for harassment on the internet. I'd like to take a call with you.
A feminist activist and independent video game developer, Quinn at the time was working with Twitter's anti-harassment arm. With tattoos on her fair skin and hair color that seems to change hourly, Quinn gained prominence a few years earlier after she was allegedly harassed by anonymous online gamers in a scandal that came to be known as Gamergate. She claimed to be harassed largely because she was a woman in a man-dominated industry, but some gamers thought Quinn was actually harassing herself for attention.
I Google her, and it's very favorable stuff. It says that she's been abused on the internet, and that now she's dedicated her life to trying to stomp out abuse. So I'm thinking in my head, like, why wouldn't I have a conversation with this girl? Like, there's, a way that we can connect, and I'm gonna help her understand what I'm doing, and she'll be able to see what I'm doing. So she calls me up, I give her my number, and the conversation just took an instantly dark turn. The conversation was downright scary. I mean, she wasn't calling to talk to me about my project, she was calling me to threaten me to end the project or else. And then she kept saying that she just knew that these anonymous gamers were gonna come after me on the internet. They were these men that were misogynist and sexist, and they were gonna come after me with racism and all this stuff, and she was trying to help me because they were going to dox my family if I did it.
Candace said she understood her concerns, but she wasn't gonna kill the project.
At this point, she just starts crying. And she says, and I'll never forget this, she says, "You're going to ruin everything." And I went, "What?" And she hung up the phone.
Within 2 hours, Candace says she was harassed in exactly the way that Quinn had warned her.
She really must be a true savant. She was able to foresee everything that actually happened. We were not a single threat had we received, and we had been Kickstarter for 16 hours. By hour 18, we were being inundated to the point that we couldn't even log onto our accounts. It was just massively people calling me a saying they were going to die, they were going to kill my family.
It was Candace's belief that Quinn was actually orchestrating the online harassment against her to torpedo her fundraising campaign.
And she was doing this trying to convince me that the gamers were the ones that did this. Like, how stupid did this woman think I was?
If Candace was right, why would an anti-harassment activist want a potential anti-harassment website shut down? And possibly more interestingly, why did Quinn say, "You're going to ruin everything"? Candace thought she knew.
She was under the assumption, which was totally wrong, that if I had launched this project, I was going to be able to unmask trolls.
What Candace concluded was that Quinn thought Social Autopsy was going to be able to find the actual identity, the real name, of anonymous online harassers that were slinging racist and sexist slurs freely on the internet. Yet Quinn still wanted her project shut down. That was strange to Candace, given Quinn's position.
Okay, she's working for the anti-harassment arm on Twitter. Let's say that during in the heat of the election, which is when this was in 2016, I had built a technology that was going to be able to unmask trolls. What would I have uncovered, and what exactly would I have ruined? How many people that are on Twitter saying die, 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 that says I'm a Trump supporter are actually Trump supporters and not just some girl sitting in their basement working for Hillary Clinton? Okay, these are sort of the existential questions that I started asking myself immediately.
Candace's instincts told her that Quinn was not what she was claiming to be.
It was like a jarring, scary thing, and I instantly tweeted, just like, "That girl Zoe Quinn, I don't know what the Gamergate scandal is. I had no idea what Gamergate was, but she is definitively harassing herself." And that opened the floodgates. That opened the absolute floodgates.
Shortly after her tweet, Candace says the liberal Washington Post attempted to smear her, and the left-wing New York Magazine published what could be interpreted as a hit piece. Candace at the time thought she was a Democrat, but the event flipped a switch in her. This was her red-pilled moment.
People always say, like, "How can you say you were red-pilled instantly?" I was red-pilled instantly. It was instant. it opened my eyes to the fact that the people that are claiming to fight racism, okay, the people that are claiming to want to give platforms to black people, I at that moment was a black female entrepreneur being stomped out by New York Magazine, okay, the Washington Post. All these people that should be my allies, be trying to help me, are viciously trying to take me down because what? Because they thought that I had built something that was going to unveil a dirty little secret. And that dirty little secret is that they were, in fact, perpetuating victim narratives. They were, in fact, perpetuating racism. They were, in fact, perpetuating sexism in the comfort of their troll accounts on Twitter. And I'm sure that that far exceeds Twitter. I'm sure it exceeds comment sections.
Through the innocent launch of a fundraising campaign, Candace had been pushed down the rabbit hole. The reaction from Quinn, the trolls, and the liberal media had her rethinking everything.
I essentially realized that for a very long time, my mind had been hacked, and that people that I thought were my friends were in fact my enemies, and people that I thought, just in the background, without paying attention to politics, I assumed they were far-right white nationalists, are just trying to tell the truth.
It made her rethink her education as well, eventually coming to the conclusion that black people are indoctrinated starting from a very young age.
They're learning that they have an allegiance to the Democratic Party. We've learned it since we were in middle school. It's the first time I can remember it. It maybe went beyond it. But my first time studying and learning this stuff, we are constantly told over and over again with repetition, the correct answer to the test is always black people made progress because the Democrats saved them. Black people went backwards because Republicans did this or that. So this is not so much, it's a massive misinformation campaign. It's a massive miseducation.
This is a theme I've heard before, that black Americans are conditioned from a young age to vote for Democrats.
We don't need anyone spoon-feeding us a narrative of anything. See, we've been conditioned to let somebody spoon-feed us a narrative.
So I first heard of Diamond and Silk shortly after the first Republican presidential debate in 2015, and like most early Trump supporters, I was hooked.
Megan, whatever your name is.
The two rose to social media prominence after posting a video angry at then Fox News personality Megyn Kelly for using a spat between Donald Trump and Rosie O'Donnell to paint Trump as a sexist during the debate.
Your forum last night. Yes. You know, perhaps you don't need to be hosting debates.
Perhaps
what she needs to do, maybe it's time for us to file Kelly and make her go back to report news at the local news.
Their natural comedic delivery and contagious energy led to them being the first grassroots African-American supporters of the real estate mogul to pierce public consciousness, paving the way for others, like Candace Owens, to rise into prominence once Trump was elected. Diamond and Silk had been lifelong Democrats, but the shoe really never seemed to fit comfortably.
I always felt that someone right about how we do things, but okay, you go along with it. But the 8 years that Obama was in office, and when I would turn on the TV and see people rioting, I remember one black child, he looked like a teenager. He said, all of the white people have money, but we don't have money. When I saw that kind of stuff, see, I didn't see that under Bush. I saw that up under Obama. That's when I started feeling real uncomfortable. Wait a minute. Why is this happening and we have a black president?
And so we got tired of hearing a well-dressed lie.
Right.
From politicians, nothing is happening for communities, especially in the black community under a black president.
Mm-hmm.
When we saw all of that, we're like, what experience do you have? Because it's not working.
They started to feel detached from the Democrat Party and politicians in general at the close of Obama's term. But one afternoon in June 2015, Silk got a feeling that that was all about to change.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I am officially running for President of the United States, and we are going to make our country great again.
Whenever Donald Trump came down the escalators and he began to speak and talk about all of the different things that nobody else would say.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, here's the solution right here.
But why didn't these two ladies align with a Republican before Trump? Their answer was similar to Candace Owens.
When we say that we're lifelong Democrats, that's something that is basically we're conditioned.
Right.
In the black community, you're conditioned that if you want to eat, if you want to have any little bitty thing, you have to vote Democrat because we're going to give it to you. The Republicans is not going to give you anything. They're going to take everything from you.
That's what they would tell us. That's
right.
What the leaders would tell us. That's why black people voted Democrat, because they will always say, at least you will eat under a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
But we did what we were conditioned to do.
Candace Owens called it indoctrination. Diamond and Silk called it conditioning. Two ways to say the same thing, and that is, black Americans are being taught a victim mentality, and it's pushed into the black community from every angle.
First of all, you have people like the NAACP, the Congressional Black Caucuses,
mm-hmm.
the Rainbow Coalitions,
the black leaders.
The black leaders that tell you, you need to vote Democrat.
Right.
Because if you don't, you ain't gonna eat. You're gonna barely get by. And they paint this picture as if the Republican Party is a horrible party.
Nothing against churches, but you have churches. You have black leaders. Then you have parents. It's like when I say that it's hereditary. It's passed down generations to generations.
Their parents did it. What it was.
It was something that was customary to do within the black community, and that's just what you done.
Diamond and Silk have seen this victim narrative pumped into the black community from all avenues, even from institutions that should be void of indoctrination, our schools. They can recall one particular lesson plan that had an impact, a lesson plan I received myself as a kid.
Okay, so I may not have paid attention in school, but this is what they would do. They would play this show called Roots.
Right.
Tonight, we present a landmark in television entertainment. Roots. The true story Alex Haley uncovered in his 12 years search across the seven generations of his ancestry.
Although it claimed to be a true story at the time, Roots was a 1977 TV miniseries that was later found to be a fictional story of an African teenager named Kunta Kinte, as he was enslaved in Africa and brought to America. The series was a brutal and graphic depiction of slavery.
They will play that show. And that's how you learned the history of what was going on. No, it's really the truth.
Right.
And now that kind of stuff will outrage people. But what they did not do is they did not tell us who sold black people into slavery, because really it was other Africans that had sold other Africans into slavery. Like, they didn't give you the details. They took a story and sensationalized it.
Right.
And that's how you learned it.
Mm-hmm. And then the more that they continue to play that story, Ruth, over and over and over, and more stories like that, what it did, it kept you stuck in the pain of your ancestor. You begin to believe that that's you. And that's happening to me and my people right now, even though you've never picked cotton a day in your life,
mm-hmm.
even though you was never a slave. Under any slave master a day in your life. And that's being implemented in the new generation, that they feel like, oh, I'm so in pain. I've been whipped with many stripes, and the white man is the one that's out to get me. That's taught mentality.
I remember the impact of the Roots miniseries as a child. I lived in an all-black community. I didn't have a black friend, as the cliche goes. Literally every friend in my neighborhood was black. But initially, I don't recall any of us noticing our skin tone. There came a time, though, when something changed. For some of the kids, my name went from Patrick to Honky, and they became aggressive towards me. As a child, I didn't understand the new hostility, but as I grew older and reflected on the time, I attributed it to kids being taught to see the world through the lens of race by learning about slavery and the civil rights movement at an age when their minds weren't ready to process that kind of information. We weren't born thinking there's a difference between white and black people. We are actually taught that. I remember testing this by asking my daughter to describe a preschool classmate that was black. My wife remembers that time. Do you remember when I asked our daughter about M or I asked her basically to describe M when she was maybe four. Do you remember that?
Oh, of course. I'll never forget it. It was this amazing moment where our daughter never once said that M was black. She never used the color of her skin as a descriptor. It was almost as if she didn't see it. It just didn't register. She had no idea. what black was, because we never taught her that.
And I remember when they started to learn about the civil rights movement, and our daughter came home and basically told us that M had gotten upset that day.
I remember that very, very vividly, because I remember in that moment I realized that all of a sudden our daughter, you know, she was sort of being taught that M was different and that M was a victim somehow, that she'd been victimized, and certainly M felt that way because she cried that day. And our daughter immediately, you know, she felt bad for M. She almost felt sorry for her. But then quickly thereafter, you know, after a couple of months, I think M continued to feel bad. And our daughter, she was sort of like, well, you know, I love M. I would never treat her bad. Nobody at school treats her bad. So she shouldn't feel bad. She should, you know, that was in the past. But I think at school, when they continue to drive that narrative, even our young daughter, she recognized that that was problematic. She did not, because she did not and does not see M as a victim. She sees her as an equal. And she didn't understand why they were trying to shove her into this box. And she recognized that it was making M feel bad.
As early as elementary school, kids are being taught racism. They're being taught to be racist. They're being told there's a difference between white and black people. And by doing so, we perpetuate the victim-oppressor narrative. Kanye West put it best. His daughter came home from school one day and told him about a lesson she learned.
My wife said to my daughter, tell daddy what you learned in school. And she said, I learned that mama's white and I'm black. I said, damn, I wish I got the heads up. They said, no, we had to tell her because of Martin Luther King's birthday. But a white teacher told her that. So what does it mean to be black in America if a white teacher tells her that she's black? You might be Kanye West's daughter, but you black. My daughter was free. We start putting these ideas and ideals on people. That's why we are in a simulation.
His daughter was free until her teacher taught her otherwise. This victim narrative is taught by the Democrats and their allies for one simple reason: power. It's translated into Democrats dominating the so-called black vote. For the presidential elections from 1984 to 2016, for over 30 years, black Americans who either voted for the Democrat or Republican candidate voted from 88% to 96% in favor of the Democrat presidential candidate. It wasn't always that way, though. There was a time when black Americans voted for Republicans in large numbers, and Dr. Martin Luther King actually promoted a bipartisan approach to civil rights. I spoke to his niece, Alveda King, about why her family's legacy has been hijacked by the Democrat Party. She explained to me when black Americans began a large move to the Democrat Party. It does seem that much of your uncle's accomplishments and legacy and your family's legacy appears to be owned, or I don't know if co-opted is the right word, but owned by the Democrats.
Can I say this? Can I say what happened was?
Yep.
Like the young people say, what happened was.
In October 1960, MLK Jr. had been asked to join a sit-in with students at a lunch counter in Atlanta. He agreed to join them and was arrested, as he anticipated. The students were released quickly from jail, but MLK Jr. was held for a traffic and parole violation, and the judge sentenced him to 6 months hard labor in a state penitentiary. His wife Coretta was deeply concerned for his life. At the time, John F. Kennedy was in deep trouble with the so-called black vote. MLK Jr.'s father, Daddy King, as Alveda refers to him, was a registered Republican and devout Baptist that didn't want Kennedy to be in the White House. He'd even signed a full-page ad endorsing Nixon for president. But now his son's life was in jeopardy by being in jail in the South.
And Daddy King said, I've got a suitcase full of, I don't remember if he said 20,000 votes or something like that. He says, but I will give them to whoever gets my son out of jail.
So the family approached both Nixon and Kennedy's people.
Kennedy did not want to help my uncle, but his brother said, you've got to help this man. Richard Nixon, who had said some pretty harsh things about blacks, actually, but he says, help him, yeah. But his people said, you can't touch him.
Nixon decided not to get involved. Many of Kennedy's people argued against him getting involved as well. But two key advisors tasked with winning the black vote convinced him to at least give his wife Coretta a call. Martin Luther King Jr. spoke about Kennedy's involvement with his release.
I would say first that many forces worked together to bring about my release. I don't think any one force brought it about, but you had a plurality of forces working together. I'm sure that the interests of the public in general all over America had a great deal to do with it. Now, it is true that Senator Kennedy did take a specific step. He was in contact with officials in Georgia during my arrest, and he called my wife, made a personal call, and expressed his concern and said to her that he was working and trying to do something to make my release possible. His brother, who at that time was his campaign manager, also made direct contact with officials and even the judge in Georgia, so that the Kennedy family did have some part. At least they expressed a concern, and they did have some part in the release.
After the call, JFK's campaign printed up 2 million flyers promoting his intervention and passed them out at black churches.
So history flipped. My granddaddy told people to vote for John Kennedy. After that, there was a tremendous exodus from the Republican Party, because most blacks back then, right before that, were actually Republicans, because right after the war and you had black men elected to Congress and all of that, they were actually Republicans, you see. But when Daddy King said he would vote, support whoever got his son out of jail, people voted for President Kennedy. So blacks exited and went to the Democratic Party, and nothing Democrats could do they could do no wrong.
The political class largely attributed JFK's win to the black vote. The Democrats took notice, and so began their consistent use of identity politics. Persistently painting Republicans as racist has paid quite a dividend to Democrats come election night, but has done nothing to improve the lives of black people. The wealth gap between blacks and whites has stayed stubbornly constant since the civil rights movement, yet the Dems continue to push the victim narrative because it gives them power. The spread of this victim narrative is so pervasive that it's even infected unexpected corners of society.
I am racist because I think every white person is racist. I participate in institutions, like I benefit from capitalism, which was built on slavery and racism.
These days, a white person claiming all white people are racist is nothing extraordinary. But for this particular white person to admit she's racist says a lot about how effective this conditioning has become. Because she's blind.
I believe there's racism within the blind community because there's racism everywhere, and the blind community is no exception.
When society has convinced a blind person that they are racist, the power of the indoctrination industry is revealed. Which brings us back to the question, why does the black community vote overwhelmingly for Democrats?
If you want to vote for a racist in the White House, then you better vote for Republicans.
I mean, we've talked about everything but race tonight. We've talked about income. We've talked about class. We've talked about region. We haven't talked about race. This was a white lash.
The fact is that the Republican Party today is the party of racism.
The Democrats get 90% of the black vote because it successfully sells a victim narrative, conditioning the black community throughout their entire lives that the Republicans are their enemies. But we may be seeing the beginnings of people escaping this mental prison. New American minds are beginning to take over.
Something has got to give, and right. Something has got to change. And there's a yoke that has to be broken. And we understand that the leaders are from the era of the 60s, but they still got us fighting the 60s fights. Well, we done already overcame that. Now it's just time for people to come up. They don't realize that. And that's why I say it's time for them to pass the civil rights torch, or why don't we just have human rights and keep
that's
it moving.
Right.
And Diamond and Silk aren't alone.
Victim mentality is not cool. I don't know why people like being oppressed. It's the weirdest thing I've ever heard. I love
Candace Owens is arguably the most important voice driving a new cultural conversation. one that looks to end the victim narrative being sold to the Black community.
I have no intentions of stopping. I'm on a war path right now to help the Black community understand that we have been lied to, we have been used, we have been manipulated, and that's all by the Democratic Party.
If these new voices have anything to say about it, Black Americans will no longer be a sure thing for Democrats when they make that booty call come election night. And what a glorious day that'll be.
Red Pilled America is an iHeartRadio original podcast. It's produced by me, Adriana Cortez, and Patrick Carelci for Informed Ventures. Thanks for listening.